Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, the big matchup underway. It's the Celtics and the Cavaliers. At this point, with 2 minutes remaining in the first quarter, Cavaliers on top. They brought their energy tonight. It's Cavaliers 27-17, and they look pretty impressive thus far.
If it remains home court advantage, it's going to end up in Boston, so we'll see.
But you have a real feeling that this is a game the Celtics need to win.
I do. I think it's pivotal.
It does feel that way to me as well, in the sense that you've got these young players like Tatum and Brown on the Celtics, and they're facing the king. There's an intimidation factor. I mean, absolutely. At some point, don't they look at this and think, oh my gosh, are we really going to be able to beat LeBron James?
Well, and I think going along with that is you've got a Cleveland team who's been to the finals. I mean, not all of them, because there's been a lot of drama in Cleveland.
A lot of turnover. Yep.
But you've got Kevin Love and LeBron and, you know, J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson. They've been to the finals the last 3 years, and there is something to say with experience. And in the playoffs are a different animal. Well, and these young guys haven't had that with the Celtics.
Well, yeah, if you just look at Jason Tatum, who's about 20 years old, when he was probably playing AU ball at 8 or 9 or 10 years old, LeBron James was in the league, and LeBron James was emerging as a star. Tatum has looked up to him since he was about 10 years old, and now he's got to beat him in Cleveland, and that's got to be a tall task.
Right, a 33-year-old going against a 19-year-old.
Well, LeBron, amazingly, at 33, may be better than he ever has been.
Oh, I think
he has
so
not
too.
Slowed down a bit.
He'll tell you he's better than he ever has been.
Well, he will tell you that. Arguably, his shot is as good as it's ever been, too. Something Rick Barry noted, that
right.
He's made some adjustments to his shot. And so when you combine his shot with the ability to drive and, frankly, the big physical specimen that he is unique on the court.
Yeah, the court, Rob Gronkowski, that's his size.
Yeah, it's a big, tight end type size with great mobility.
Great mobility. He's so agile. It's impressive.
And he's remained injury-free all of his career. So this is his showcase. Cavaliers leading 30-17 with a minute remaining in the first quarter. When we come back, we're going to jump tracks. We're going to talk NFL. We're going to take stock of Johnny Football, who is back in professional football. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss of SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, we return to the NFL, where Dak Prescott has declared that he plans on being the best QB in the history of the Dallas Cowboys. At least that's his ambition.
Okay, that's a heady goal, and I like it. Good for him.
Yeah.
I mean, you're looking at a franchise that boasts Roger Staubach, Troy Aikman, Tony Romo. I mean, this is some serious company. And good for him. Fourth rounder saying, I want to be the best ever. I'm psyched if he's on my team.
Yeah, he's got two Hall of Fame quarterbacks he'd have to surpass in Staubach and Aikman, both in the Hall of Fame. And Romo, of course, had a great career. Don Meredith had a decent career.
Right.
And even there were a few years there with Craig Morton that people might remember. But my old favorite was Danny White. Maybe because some people thought I looked like him. Anyway.
Well, there you go.
I think Danny
White.
You
and Trey Wingo, too.
I think in the history of the NFL and the Cowboys, Danny White has been underrated. I thought his win-loss percentage was pretty good. He just couldn't get the Cowboys into the Super Bowl. He got them to three straight NFC championships.
Ooh.
So I'm hoping Dak Prescott will fare better than Danny White.
Oh, I hope so. It's kind of like Aaron Rodgers.
Kind of like
he's been to one Super Bowl.
That's
one,
right.
One
right.
Super Bowl.
Yeah. And Danny was the quarterback on the other side, playing against Joe Montana in the catch game.
Oh,
and
gosh.
What's notable is the Cowboys, of course, almost won that game, would have gone to the Super Bowl.
Right.
History would have been different. The catch was a turning point and really the transition from a Cowboys NFC to a 49ers NFC absolutely. In that
era.
Oh,
absolutely. It set off the 49ers dynasty. That was incredible. Where did Danny White come from? Where did he play college ball?
I believe Arizona.
Okay.
Off the top of my head, but my Danny White history and trivia might be a little rusty. It's been some time.
He'd be fired up. You're talking about him, though. I can tell you that.
So Johnny Football, another guy who fires me up to talk about, really
he had
aspirations of getting back into the NFL.
He tried.
And he was at a couple of tryouts. He was there throwing the ball.
He did the spring league in Austin, Texas. And then he went to University of San Diego's pro day, you know, to throw for Rashad Penny and some other people and to try and get looked at. But, you know, I think NFL teams, the trust has been broken with his stint in Cleveland and then all the antics afterwards. I think it's going to be really tough for teams to have trust in him. Do you think I'm being overdramatic?
No, I think he's got to go prove himself. He's got to play at a high level. So he's just signed a 2-year deal with the Hamilton Tiger Cats in the Canadian Football League. And that would be a good venue for him to go and demonstrate that he can move around and throw the ball well effectively.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think what we need to see in the CFL with Johnny Manziel is he going to stay the course, meaning staying on these medicines?
Yeah,
that he
keep
needs,
out of trouble.
Keep out of trouble. Or going back to the same old Johnny. I hope we see a change.
Right.
I really hope we do. So we'll see.
The thing about Johnny Football is that physically, he's not the prototype, right? He was, was short, moved around well, had great footwork. But those are things that the feet will likely go faster than the arm. Mm-hmm. And so his window, the sort of runway of NFL time that he can play, I think is shorter than somebody like a Tom Brady with that physique, who's big and lanky and can stand in the pocket. I think Johnny Football doesn't have a lot of time to waste. If he ever wants to be an NFL quarterback, it needs to happen in the next year. He doesn't get to go do 4 years in the CFL and then find his way back to the NFL.
No, but he did sign a 2-year deal. So he is going to be in the CFL for 2 years. And he's been working with the quarterback guru in California, Terry Shea, who also works with Odell Beckham Jr. as well, but still no opportunity came. So you're right. This will be interesting, but I think he has burned trust in the NFL. It's going to be tough for him to get back. Let's see what he can do.
Well, his former team, the Cleveland Browns, are in the news again.
Lights, camera, Cleveland.
Very interesting that Cleveland, of all places, not necessarily a marquee team, has been chosen for Hard Knocks this year. They will be followed around all during training camp. Everything will be filmed. We'll get an inside peek at all things Browns.
I love Hard Knocks.
I love Hard Knocks, but do you love the Browns for Hard Knocks?
Here's why. And you should love this because it's your boy.
Okay.
They want Baker Mayfield with his fiery personality, his freedom to speak his mind is going to be a very entertaining part of Hard Knocks. He has no problem saying whatever he feels. I think that the tricky part with Cleveland is that they're still a very young team and they need to lift themselves out of the NFL basement. And I don't know that this is going to do it for them. It's really going to put a big spotlight on them.
I actually just don't know that it's good for this team at this stage.
I don't think it's good for the team.
I mean, this is a team that just needs to get to some semblance of credibility, and they've got none. It is one of those things where I know they've got a lot of young guys, too, and I think that for young guys to have cameras following them around everywhere they go just doesn't do anything. Well, you're agreeing with this, Robert.
Well, yes, I am agreeing with this. And most likely on Hard Knocks, it's always been the team who had the worst record or whatnot. But this would be great for the Cleveland Browns to get an insight of Baker Mayfield, who, when he came out of Oklahoma, some of his antics on the field were reminding you of Johnny Football, Johnny Manziel 2.0.
Oh, right.
But it's great to see that the Cleveland Browns, this season, upcoming season, look like a team that can win more than zero games, than they won last season.
Yeah, but, it won't be hard to improve, right?
They will improve. I believe it.
It won't be hard to improve, but they added some great pieces, got some great pieces during the draft. So, I mean, it's exciting to see. Everybody, of course, want to see Baker Mayfield. Everybody want to see
Baker. Well, I think that's
Baker.
Exactly the draw, Robert. I think you hit the nail on the head because, honestly, I don't see how this can be good for the team. They're too young. They're still really young, not proven. And Baker Mayfield, while he is going to be entertaining, he's very prone to distraction.
Yep.
We have seen this throughout his entire college career in every spot that he has landed.
Yeah, can't you just see a practice where he's not focused on the practice, but he's hamming it up for the cameras?
Or grabbing his, you know, I don't know, whatever family
whatever
jewels.
He might want to do that. Yes.
You know what? Here's another scary thought for Hugh Jackson. He should be the one nervous, honestly, head coach of the Cleveland Browns. Two of the last four coaches whose teams were featured on Hard Knocks were fired by the end of the season, and that's Atlanta's Mike Smith and the Rams' Jeff Fisher.
Oops.
So, you know, you look at Hugh Jackson.
It does unveil them a little bit.
1-32 in the last two seasons. I like Hugh, but you're putting a spotlight on that.
That's interesting because, of course, we're living in a world now where the Cowboys had that show All or Nothing done about their season last year, which gave a glimpse into Jason Garrett and his head coaching role. And I don't know, it's mixed reviews coming out of that. There are a lot of people who thought he looked fine. He dropped some F-bombs that everybody seemed to respect and think was good. But on the other side, there was a lot of feeling that he just sort of clapped along and cheered for the players and didn't really do any coaching. He left it all the real coaching to his assistants. That it was sort of a question of what he really did. Was he just a puppet figurehead? And so he's taking some criticism. Sometimes these views into the locker room don't show so well for the coaches.
No, it's very true. And new GM in Cleveland, John Dorsey, he is excited about this. He said, you know, he was reluctant at first, but once he looked into it and talked about it as an organization, he said, you know, we feel that this is the right time. Because it's going to give the fans the opportunity to see how passionate the people in this building are about winning and how excited they are to prepare for the 2018 season. That is optimism at its finest.
Well, it is optimistic. I guess I am sympathetic to the one thing he said. The Browns, from the outside, seem to be the laughingstock of the NFL. Right. And certainly they have a credibility gap with their fans. If this peek into the locker room opened our eyes to the fact that this team is committed, they are hardworking. If the team showed well, they might earn some respect they don't currently have.
I agree with that. It's true. It's going to be tricky, and you know what? I'm going to watch. I love this show.
Who's been your favorite over the years? Is there one team and history? I mean, the Rams didn't show well. Jeff Fisher ended up getting fired.
Right.
Robert, do you have a favorite? Or you have a favorite, Carla?
I love the Texans.
The Texans Hard Knocks.
I got really attached to Courtney Brown. That was really hard for me when he got let go. And, I loved it. I got a cool inside look to the Texans. I thought it was really amazing. Mm. Really amazing.
I'll go with the Texans. You get to know when you watch Hard Knocks, you get to know the team.
Yeah.
Even if it's
their personality.
Yeah, even if it's not your favorite team, you get to know the team, the players who didn't make the cut, who made the practice squad. So it gives you an inside depth of how things work in the NFL. I enjoyed the Cowboys. I think when T.O. was on that team, did a Hard Knocks when they were in Vallejo, California. Yeah. I enjoyed that one, and I enjoyed the Texans. But it's just Hard Knocks is just about a profile of an NFL team. You get to know the players, the personalities, how preseason goes, how it's the grit, the grind to make a team.
No, it is. I do worry that it does reveal probably a little bit more than the coaches would like, maybe.
Sure. I don't see how it advances your team competitively. It just could be a distraction, right? Mm-hmm.
I think that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And that was Bill O'Brien's complaint.
Sure.
During the show was that this is a distraction and they had to be careful when the cameras were rolling. They didn't want to show something that would, but they ended up having a good season after that show. So who knows?
All right. When we come back, we're going to shift gears. We're going to talk a little MLB. We've got Doug Baldwin joining us. He is with NBC Sports Chicago. He tracks the Cubs. He tracks all teams. We're going to ask him about the Cubs, how they're faring thus far this year. The Astros, the Yankees, the Red Sox. We're going to get a good discussion with Doug Baldwin when we return on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gal and Carla Dawson.
It's the long weekend kicking off the summer. Is your car ready for summer road trips? From changing your oil and filter and topping off fluids to inspecting your vehicle braking system and replacing cracked window blades, O'Reilly's Auto Parts has 1,000 of parts and accessories at guaranteed low prices to get you on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices, every day. Joining us now on SB Nation Radio is Doug Glanville. He is the Cubs insider for NBC Sports Chicago. Doug, welcome to the show.
All right. Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Well, I guess we should start with the Cubs. They have not been all that we might have thought coming into the season. Why don't you give us an update on all things Cubs?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been they've had a little bit ups and downs in terms of not quite getting that rhythm where they rattle off, you know, 9 out of 10. It's been, you know, 5 here, 2 there, lost streak. And a lot of it is their initial months of pitching, particularly the starting pitching. The relievers were fantastic, but the starters were just looking like they were looking for a groove. Darvish was new. He was kind of struggling, especially in the middle of the game. We'd have this one inning that would kind of implode. And Quintana, who was, sort of a big expectations for him, had some struggles with command. So generally, command was hurting the starting rotation. You mix that with some inconsistent hitting, and, you know, they had these ups and downs, but they're still in a great position. So lately, this past week, they've played fairly well. A lot of guys are getting into their rhythm, and especially with their starters, Darvish had a nice outing last time against the Reds, so they're looking up, but they haven't been the juggernaut quite as expected from pole to pole, but it's early.
And, Doug, we know that, you know, pitching, teams are as good as their pitching. So let's look at the dominance of two mid-30-age pitchers in Max Scherzer with the Nationals and Justin Verlander in Houston. How do you explain how these guys are getting better with age?
I mean, you know, it is really incredible. I mean, you think about Verlander's almost had this second wave of domination. He had some, you know, struggles, health struggles, fell off this pedestal of being the top pitcher, and then all of a sudden he's kind of gotten it together and got ways to get that sort of second win. Their ability to learn very quickly and be able to find new ways to get hitters out. They use not only their change of speeds, the location, but they're really working the zone in a much more effective zone. I think of Scherzer with a three-quarter style across his body pitcher, and he's found ways to just locate on both sides of the plate with an unorthodox delivery and found strikeouts in all quadrants of the zone. Mm-hmm. And that's impressive because it's not just up and down, it's not just in and out, it's also a depth thing. We talk about changing of speeds. And when you learn how to throw different kinds of pitches at different speeds, at different depths, and understanding off to blow people away, even though they have the stuff to do so, they've mastered that at such a critical time in their career that it's just added longevity and also added dominance.
We're talking to Doug Glanville, who, among his many traits, he is an Ivy League professor at the University of Pennsylvania. So, Doug, let's look at the shortstops in the American League. It's quite a collection. How do you stack rank the top three? Have you ever seen a group like this?
I mean, it's a tough one to even pick because there's a little different spot. You know, we just talked about Verlander and the Astros. Their microscopic team ERA relates to not just Verlander dominating, but everybody in that rotation. They are just at a cut above. I believe they're almost a full point in ERA lower than the next contender. So I think you're looking much more of a team that has so many different weapons, can beat you different ways. So they're picking up right where they left off as being this versatile team that can really beat you in so many facets. Then you move over to the Yankees and Boston had much more of this sort of power game. What's impressed me about the Yankees is sort of a little bit of a small stat, but their pitching has given up, you know, really top five fewest home runs.
So you're talking about the Yankees, and I see that they've just now won 8 consecutive series for the first time since 1998, which is unbelievable. And you look what Brian Cashman's done in collecting all this talent and prospects through trades. With that said, would you or shouldn't you think the Mets should go out and see what they can get for Jacob DeGrom or Noah Syndergaard at this point?
You know, I always feel like this time of year, you're talking, you know, mid-May, it's still early. You know, yes, there are going to be feelers. They're always working the deal machine. But you still have time to kind of see if certain things flush out, see what the best deal is. You know, DeGrom, although the velocity's been there, you know, there's been just whatever question marks have sort of arisen. And I think now when you establish, okay, if you know, want to know a pitcher's going to be healthy to make these runs, especially when you're talking about a postseason team that's going to tack on extra innings into September, October. So I think that is, these are question marks that you probably want to take a little more time to establish. But, you know, the Yankees, you know, as I mentioned, keeping the ball in the ballpark, their pitching has been really a shining star. And maybe in some ways unexpected. You knew the home runs were going to be there, but the fact that they keep the ball in the yard and have found ways to pitch, you know, any piece they add is just going to take them to that next level. And they may well get there already organically because, you know, they're that complete right now.
We're talking to Doug Glanville, Cubs insider for NBC Sports Chicago. So, Doug, would love to ask you about the shortstop position. It is so talented right now, particularly in the American League. Talk about guys like Gregorius and Correa and Simmons. These guys are pretty strong position right now in the American League.
Well, absolutely. I like the fact that the way I look at the lens of these players, you mentioned it, is development. It's a lot to do with development. Gregorius, you know, look, he came in on the heels of Derek Jeter, which is an impossible task. And he had to take some, you know, growing pains, changing positions, short, second base, all these changes, and really has emerged to be someone who put in the work, because I used to talk to him and his staff when I was covering a lot of the games on Wednesdays, and you know, he spent time in the offseason just refining his swing. You know, guys like Chili Davis working with. So there's no question that he has found a combination where you can't just say, well, this guy's going to have a good glove or he has an upside, but he's really become an impact player.
And Doug, if you're looking at, you know, the guys that are atop the American League and the Yankees, Red Sox, and Astros, who can compete with these three teams, and is the American League that much stronger than the National League? Who in the National League could compete with these three teams?
Yeah, well, they're a cut above. I mean, you name, you know, when you rattle those off, you have to be thinking, are they the top three best teams or the three out of five? But they're one of they're up there. Mm-hmm. They're doing it differently. You have the power game. You have the you know, the nature of the Red Sox just offensively. Astros are just doing everything, complete, but also pitching teams out of the stadium. But they're, I mean, you look at their ERA, it's almost a point lower than anybody else. So that tells you not only are they pitching well, but they're dominating to the point where teams know they need, you know, two extra runs just to even have a shot. So they're different styles, but they're playing at a level that really, there is them and the rest of the class. So in terms of competing, you know, there's teams in the National League that just, they're going to have to get hot, whether Washington Nationals, Chicago Cubs, you know, there's unexpected teams leading divisions, whether it's Atlanta or even Philadelphia is playing well. Will they sustain? If there's a question mark, but these teams you rattled off with the Yankees, they have the staying power and they also have the pocketbooks to make moves when they need to, which can really be the difference maker.
We're talking to Doug Glanville. Doug, I want to ask you about the Atlanta Braves, a bit of a surprise. Are they for real? Do you see them in the postseason?
Well, they're for real in that, you know, you don't have the predictability of young players without necessarily a track record. You know, Markakis, Freddie Freeman, of course, have been established players who are having career years. Freeman has been great for a long time. Markakis has kind of found it. But when you get veteran players that are playing some of their best baseball, you mix it with pitching that's pitched well, and then you have young guys that who are supposed to have an upside but are performing, they have the perfect and what like the we're into the season. But you know, you have guys like Acuna who have been, you know, had a lot of hot stuff come really showed why their players and can be productive. But in terms of the other aspects of being a lack of the buzz, is they built their farm system.
What the hell?
It's time for He Said, She Said on The Boss and the Gloss.
Robert, mixing it up a little bit with the music.
I like this. A little salsa.
A little salsa. A little movement going on in the studio. It works. Okay, we're at the He Said, She Said segment, which we do each week. We take the quotes, the comments of some sports luminaries, and we unpack what they're really trying to tell us all. So this week we have a pretty good set of He Said, She Said, and we should start with a former NFL wide receiver, Terrell Owens, who, by the way, says he could still play in the NFL if anyone would even give him a chance. But Tia was very, very vocal about his former head coach of the Dallas Cowboys and the current head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, Jason Garrett. Tio does not think Garrett deserves a job. Let's hear what Tio had to say about Jason Garrett.
When you really look at it, it doesn't make sense for Jason Garrett to continue to have his job, not really making any, not really expanding or not really progressing with the organization, even as a team. Under his coaching tenure there, at some point, you know, keep allowing a coach to be the scapegoat, or the players to be the scapegoat for what's not happening.
Ouch.
Yeah, I mean, you don't hear a former NFL player call out his former coach with that kind of vitriol or really that kind of direct aggression.
Well, you know, wasn't Jason Garrett T.O.'s O.C. in 07 and 08.
Right.
And I think that Jason Garrett, if I remember, and you're the Cowboy expert, but he kind of spearheaded T.O.'s exit out of Dallas. And I think there's
some sour blood there.
There's some sour blood there. But then it also raises a good point. If I take T.O. out of the situation, I think that he has a little bit of a point from my point of view. And again, I'd love to hear yours because you are all things Cowboys. But you know, Jason Garrett, when he came in 2010, he took over for Wade Phillips, and he had three consecutive 8-8 seasons. Okay, that's not great.
Very mediocre.
And he has one playoff victory in, you know, over 7 years as a head coach. I mean, I don't know. He's got a sub-500 record in the playoffs. This is America's team. Like, is this that Jerry Jones needs a yes man, and this is the guy to do it? Or what do you think?
So there's the old Bill Parcells quote that you are what your record tells you you are. And the record is not very impressive. It is interesting, though, that this narrative is out there now, the narrative that Jason Garrett is just the yes man, and that's why he stayed around, that Jerry Jones is comfortable with him. Jerry Jones would much rather have a coach like a Jason Garrett than he would have another Bill Parcells or have a Jimmy Johnson, somebody who would challenge, push, poke, prod. This enables Jerry to get what he wants done.
It also enables Jerry, if you've got a figurehead, a yes man, then guess where all the attention is? It's on Jerry.
Right.
If you've got Bill Parcells and Jimmy Johnson who are winning, who are larger than life, who, you know, people want to hear from them, Jerry's not the center of attention anymore.
Well, I do think the sum of this is that Jason Garrett needs to have a good season. He's probably got to get them back to the playoffs this year. And this is a year when they've had a lot of transition. I mean, Witten is retired. Right. Bryant is gone. They are a very young team. You've got Sean Lee on the defensive side of the ball, who's over 30. But the rest of the team is very, very young. So it is a transitional window for the Cowboys. They've quietly rebuilt. But the clock's ticking. Jason Garrett needs to get that team back in the playoffs.
Right. I think so, too.
All right, let's look at our second He Said, She Said. This is from one of your old favorites, John Madden.
Oh, yes.
And he was asked about what it would be like to have his team on Hard Knocks. And John Madden had this to say about the Raiders on Hard Knocks.
Because there's no way, had I ever had a choice to be on Hard Knocks when I was coach, there's no way in the world that I would have done it. Unless, of course, I was told to by the league, which is probably why they do that.
In which case you would have absolutely warmly greeted everybody aboard and been as open can be.
No, I would have been closed as a closed vault in a bank.
So you're smiling just hearing John Madden's voice again.
Right. I mean, these were the Raiders that I grew up with. I mean, these are the boys. This is, you know, John Matuszak, larger than life. I mean, not a choir boy, Kenny Stabler, the Snake. I mean, think about these guys. Otis Sistrunk. And then they
this
all
This is why you're wearing silver and black tonight.
I've got my silver pants on.
And you have for the last 3 years straight. Keep going. Yes.
Repping the nation. But, you know, they had this training facility near Santa Rosa, near the wine country, and there was the famous El Rancho Tropicana Hotel. I mean, let me tell you, this Hard Knocks probably would not have been G-rated, and I have to laugh and love Madden. I would be as open as a closed vault in a bank. I mean, that is literally hysterical. I love it. But, you know, it's
He's
funny.
Still got his fastball verbally.
Exactly. But, you know, teams, if no team volunteers, you can volunteer to be on Hard Knocks.
Right.
I kind of looked into this. I'm like, do you have the right to refuse it? The league then definitely can compel a team to do it. And the only way you can refuse it is if you've been on Hard Knocks within 10 years, if you have a new head coach, or if you've been in the playoffs the last 2 years. Those are your only three tickets out. So I would have loved to see John Madden's Raider team. That would have been not made for TV, but very entertaining.
All right, it'll be the Browns this year. Let's shift to the next one. He said, she said, this is Lane Johnson. He's the right tackle of the Eagles. With a little post-commentary after that Super Bowl, he came back out and had more to say. So after the Super Bowl, he said that the Patriots look like they don't have any fun. This week, on Tuesday, he had this to say about the Patriots. The Eagles, Lane Johnson, talking about the Patriots.
Here's what pissed me off is, you know, the Patriots, obviously, you know, I respect their coach. I respect Bill. I respect Tom Brady. But just because of the way they won the Super Bowls, the Patriot way, is that how everybody else is supposed to do the same thing? No, it's not. And that's what I got mad at the arrogance by them. You know, there's obviously some stuff behind closed doors. You know, their owner talking to our owner. You know, Bill talking to our head coach for the game. I'm not going to say it, but, you know, a lot of, you know, kind of built up to that. And I just got tired of hearing about it, man.
See, it always warms my heart when we get one of these with a beep.
I know, it's your favorite.
It's my favorite part of it.
If you have a beepless evening, it's just not complete.
Thank you.
Boss likes beeps.
Yes.
I am quite confused at that whole thing. So I looked into what the conversation was between Bill Belichick and Doug Peterson on the field before the Super Bowl started. And this is what Belichick said to Peterson. Hey, I tried to find a game where you were behind. I couldn't find one. Okay, Lane, I don't know why you needed to drop beeps about that. It was basically, wow.
It's a compliment.
It's a compliment. And, you know, do you remember in December, it was the Eagles were playing the Raiders. It was on Christmas Day, and it wasn't a great game. They did win 19-10. And that is when Lane Johnson said to the media, you know, I'm not talking to y'all for the rest of the year. In fact, or maybe the rest of my career. And he just walked out. Well, of course, it was December 25th, so there was approximately 6 days left in the year. I don't know why he feels the need to bring this sort of, like, do these little circus tricks.
Yeah, he is the winner. He has the Super Bowl ring.
Exactly.
He doesn't need to be a sore winner, I mean, or rub it in. Just enjoy the moment.
And, I mean, the same thing happened with this Raiders game. They won. They beat Oakland on Christmas Day. And so why are you not going to talk to the media? Like, gosh, don't lose. I can't wait to hear what's going to come out of that.
Right.
Kind of interesting. I mean, he's a phenomenal player, but just...
And a great season, and all worked out.
Season.
Enjoy it.
And he's wearing the ring. Who cares if it's the Patriot way or not? It's the Eagles way in 2018.
Fantastic for them. Okay, number four. He said, she said, this is going to be Stephen A. I want you to set this up for Stephen A. talking about LeBron. What was the context?
Oh, I love this. Okay, so this was on First Take this past week. And the question posed to Max Kellerman and Stephen A. was, how would LeBron feel about losing in the Eastern Conference Finals? Which... that's kind of a funny question as it is. And Max Kellerman basically said that, hey, LeBron doesn't play for the numbers. He plays to make the people around him better. I mean, he really sacrifices to do that. And Stephen A. had his own opinion about that, shockingly.
The point is, LeBron James always preferred being that way. Sacrifice is when you don't want to do something, but you're willing to do it for the better whole. LeBron has always been LeBron. Other people had to take different roles that they may have not wanted to take because of him. That is fact.
When Stephen A. speaks, it captures your attention, doesn't it?
It does, and I agree with him.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, when you look at it, what sacrifice has LeBron made? Because I want to give you a list of names. Dwayne Wade, Kyrie Irving, Isaiah Thomas. And honestly, Kevin Love, while he is still on the roster, has he been made better by the sacrifices from LeBron?
Right, those first three names, all guys who were ushered out of Cleveland.
Made sacrifices to come.
By the hand of LeBron,
bye-bye.
He ushered them out.
He's a culprit. But, you know, he's got to take some
And so
that.
Kevin Love was an elite player. He's now seemingly an afterthought. He's not a big name in this series or, frankly, in the Cleveland Cavaliers hierarchy right now.
But he is supposed to be their second scorer.
Right.
Their second, you know, that's their second option.
Right.
So I just think that if there's no responsibility on LeBron, why are these stars not there anymore? I don't know. Do you think I'm crazy? What do you think?
No, I actually think that he is a big part of that personnel decision-making, that he is a guy who is saying, I want this guy on my team. I don't want this guy on my team. I don't want Isaiah Thomas. And he ushered Isaiah Thomas out. And I think that's sort of self-evident right now. And then in an indirect way with Kyrie Irving, of course, it was Irving who asked to go. But there was some brokenness that existed in their relationship. Actually, when I look at the series unfolding right now, the Celtics and the Cavaliers, one of my great regrets is that Kyrie Irving is not playing for the Celtics in this series.
I'm sure it's one of his, too.
Obviously, for two reasons. One is Irving would make the Celtics far more competitive. Celtics now losing here to the Cavaliers in game three or game four. And the second thing is how great would it be to have Irving and James match up in this series, to have the rivalry, to have the divorce now bring them back on the court? And it would have been a great, great theater.
No, I think it would be. And, you know, I just think, hey, there's two sides to everything, but LeBron's got to take some blame. He definitely plays for his numbers, and he is not concerned about making others around him better. That's why these stars aren't staying. And I don't see any of them in that list of name with D-Wade, Kyrie, or IT that are better because of him.
All right, speaking of LeBron, we've got one more he said, she said, and this comes from the voice of Scottie Pippen, former teammate of Michael Jordan, talking about the incessant comparisons over who's the greatest of all time, Michael Jordan or LeBron. Let's hear from Scottie Pippen.
The comparison shouldn't ever be made. They both play two different positions. The way LeBron James play, Michael Jordan was never asked to play that way because I took that away from him. I was the point forward. I was the facilitator. Michael Jordan is a scorer. He was a defender. He played the game as complete as LeBron James did when he needed to, but he was asked to score the basketball, and that's what he was great at. And there's no game that I would ever play in and pick LeBron James over Michael Jordan.
No game.
So, interestingly, he didn't want to make the comparison. He does note that there are different positions. It's really not a fair comparison. But if he were going to pick one of them, it looks like he wants to go with Michael Jordan.
You can't blame him. He was his teammate for years. He got six rings with him. I mean, that's the right thing to say. And I love that he first said right out of the box, Pippen says, this isn't a fair comparison. They didn't play the same position.
Yep.
That is bam.
Right.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I think also another thing to look at if you're, I mean, because people are going to compare them. It's not a fair comparison, but it's going to happen because they were both so influential and legendary during the times that they were in the NBA. Is the physicality of the game when Michael was playing it, when he could get shoved all over the court by, you know, we talked about that, you know,
the bad boys of Detroit, Bill Laimbeer and his elbow.
God.
I mean, it was a tougher league back then.
It was a tough league. You cannot look at LeBron right now without getting foul called on you. You know, he's got preferential treatment, and you cannot touch him. I mean, this NBA is a lot tighter. They don't let as much physicality happen. And let's face it, LeBron gets the calls. I mean, he has established himself as, you know, a transcendent talent, which I would never dispute that. He's unbelievable. But he's got a different set of rules. You cannot look at him. And I think this is part of the reason he's never injured. Who can touch him?
Yeah, he's been very healthy all of his career.
Very durable.
But you don't see him flying to the floor very often.
No, it is not Steph Curry-ish. You know, I mean, my goodness, that guy's on the floor every time I turn around. So,
well, Cavaliers do have a halftime lead. They're up by 15 points over the Celtics in game four of that series. Of course, Celtics leading 2-1. When we come back, we will empty out the notebook. We'll figure out what we learned from Carla this week on The Boss and the Gloss of SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gal and Carla Dawson.
All right, so this is one of my favorite sort of conclusions. I always love this part of the show. I get to tell the world.
Remind me of the dumb things I said.
No, I tell the world what I learned from you. Ah. All the wisdom that comes out of the head of the gloss.
Yeah.
And so I'll start with one thing is you are really fired up about Deshaun Watson, his return to the Texans, and what they might be poised to do with Deshaun.
I love me some Deshaun and always have. So let me tell you, if you remember, the Texans were sensational with Deshaun.
Yes.
Setting rookie records, beat Dan Marino's record.
35 points every game, it seemed.
Oh, just couldn't get enough. Win or loss, it was fun football. And they were horrendous without him, 1-8. So I love me some Deshaun, and I'm expecting big things from him.
All right.
It's going to be exciting.
I agree. That's learning one. Learning two, Terrence Williams should not be out driving a Lamborghini at 4 a.m. while under the influence of alcohol.
That's correct. Terrence, get in before midnight, 11:59.
Really?
Back in the
Are
Costa.
You sure?
I'm sure.
All right.
Or I like Robert's suggestion, get an Uber.
All right. My third one. You know more about Chewbacca and Star Wars than Kendrick Perkins of the Cavaliers.
And that's not saying much. Kendrick, you got to up your game on that one. Woo!
But you have a soft spot for Chewbacca, don't you?
Yeah. I do. Who doesn't?
All right, America's got a soft spot for the gloss. You've been listening to The Boss and the Gloss. Robert, thanks so much behind the glass. Next up is Patrick Creighton here on SB Nation Radio.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.